He's a man who loves books, and she calls herself a matchmaker between people and books. And you're going to love hearing them tell about what they're doing in the literary community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm Garland McWaters, and this is the Spirit of Leading podcast. This man who loves books is Jeff Martin, the founder of Magic City Books and Booksmart Tulsa. And his partner is Cindy Hulsey, the executive director of the Tulsa Literary Coalition and the general manager of Magic City Books. And I understand you're actually co-founders of the Tulsa Literary Coalition. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've been kind of a team now for a while, kind of a dynamic duo.
All right. Well, listen, I've recently been introduced to the whole project. When we began seeing some of the Booksmart events, we started coming to those, and that's kind of how I became a little bit familiar with the project. The more I heard about this information dribbling out over those events that I was going to, the more interested I became in not just the project itself, but the story behind the project. I think it's really a fascinating example of the spirit of leading. So we're going to be talking about that. And I know, Jeff, also you are an editor, a co-editor of a book about what's happening with the great American novel. What's happening with writing? Tell me about where that came from.
Well, you know, books and literary culture has been part of my life since I was in my early 20s. There was a weird moment in the world where in 2007, 2008, when the Kindle first was coming out, and the Kindle debut coincided with the economic collapse. So those two things happened at the same time. So you had this weird moment where ebooks were emerging. The economy was tanking, which then had things like Borders going out of business and all these kind of Chicken Little moments for the book industry. And there was a piece in The New Yorker by a writer I really like named Nicholson Baker. And it was about, and he's a guy who's a very, very, very literary novelist, the most kind of insider literary cult novelist kind of person you could think of. But he wrote a piece about how he was really interested in reading, not on a Kindle, but on an iPod Touch, I believe, was the thing. And he talked about reading on that and how it was changing his reading habits. And I thought, wow. This guy who, you know, is a baby boomer, you know, someone who I thought of as a very bookish person is embracing this new technology. So I thought, I'm interested in that. So a friend of mine and I spent about a year and a half talking with writers around the country and some even beyond the country about what their thoughts on the future of books were. And it kind of broke down to three categories, you know. Optimistic, pessimistic, and I have no idea because I can't tell the future. And I think those last ones were probably more realistic about it because there were a lot of people just saying books were dead. There were a lot of people saying there will be no impact. And I think, as with most things, it's always that gray zone in the middle where things end up. So that's kind of why we did that book, and it hit at the right time. And it was a fun project to work on.
Right. I've read through the book, and it was fascinating to hear all those different points of view. The nature of books might be changing, but the nature of story remains. And that's where I've been interested in the literary aspects of it, is the aspect of storytelling. And the more I heard about you all talk about it, the more I realized that's kind of where it seemed to me like the Tulsa Literary Coalition was focusing, in a sense, what Magic City Books is kind of going to be all about. Now, Cindy, you and Jeff kind of happened upon each other along the way. Tell me about how this partnership came about.
Well, I think our meeting speaks to what we're trying to do here at Magic City Books. Jeff and I met when he worked at a big chain bookstore, and my husband and I used to go in at least once a week. And he would always engage us and talk to us. And I usually walked out with a book in my hand that he had recommended. And that was the beginning of our friendship. And then we, after that, worked together. When I worked at the library, we partnered on several programs and just got to know each other. At one point, we even had a meeting. And remember, Jeff, when you and Molly came over to our house, and we talked about, wouldn't it be great if we could open a bookstore and Molly could run a cafe next door? And it didn't work out exactly like we were thinking at that moment, But, you know, here we are probably half a decade later, and we have a bookstore, and Molly has a cafe. She has a wonderful bakery, Antoinette Baking Company. So in a way, we took a circuitous route, but we kind of ended up in the place that we really, that where our hearts were.
That's an interesting aspect of the story, in that how many things happened because someone had a conversation over a meal or in a restaurant or just standing around talking to each other and say, you know, why don't we? And the next thing you know, you're in the middle of that kind of a project. Mm-hmm. Now, Jeff, your history in loving, being a lover of books, I said you are a man who loves books, because that's the impression I have of you. Every time I've heard you talk, and this passion just rolls out. Tell us a little bit, where did that come from? Was that with you all your life, or did you grow into that?
I always tell people that I'm not particularly tied to the concept of a bunch of paper bound together. I'm tied to the concept of ideas. And I heard there's a great modern dancer named Bill T. Jones, and I once heard him talk about why he does what he does. And I'm, you know, not particularly into modern dance, but he said something that really resonated with me, and it stuck with me ever since. And he said, all I want to do in life is be an active participant in the world of ideas. And I always thought that phrase was really interesting, and because it's become the way I view my life. I'm interested in ideas, I'm interested in conversation, I'm interested in the story. And for me, there's just never been a better vehicle for the ideas than books. And there have been a lot of kind of posers along the way, people trying to take that crown from books, but I think it still remains the undefeated heavyweight champion of ideas, our books. And so that's why I do what I do. I'm interested in hearing people's stories. I want to read stories. I want to think about topics that I've never thought about before. I want to travel to places in my mind that I may never get to travel to in the physical realm. I want to step into the shoes of people that I'll never be, you know, whether it's a person with a different job, or it's a person of a different gender or a different sexual orientation. I mean, really anything. That's the magic to me of books, is that you're kind of an avatar for whatever experience you're interested in reading about. And that's where my passion comes from.
So it sounds like you are interested in a lot of different kinds of things. You're not sort of like a genre-specific person.
Yeah, I think it's called a dilettante, I think is the word for it. I have a lot of interests, you know, and maybe not super deep, but I'm interested in everything. I always tell my wife, it's always kind of funny, she'll say, I always say, you know, only boring people get bored, you know, and the flip side of that is these are kind of things your grandma would say, but you know, you're only interesting if you're interested, you know. I think those are kind of cliche, but I think they're also very true. I think if you stay curious and you're interested in other people's lives and you're interested in stories and you're interested in narrative, you're never going to be bored, and there's always something new to read about. That's why every time a new magazine or a new book comes out, to me it's just an endless journey. Having something to look forward to is the thing that keeps me going. And when I think about new ideas, that's where my passion comes from.
Anything particular that has your attention right now?
You know, right now I'm always interested in, of course, politics is always on my mind, unfortunately, in the world we live in. You know, it seems like we can't escape it no matter what side you're on. That's just the kind of where we are. But I'm more interested in the way people think the world is going to be versus the reality. I think we live in a time right now where, you know, if you look at the trend of books, there is so much dystopian writing happening. There is so much strangely speculative fiction that's all, unfortunately, very dark and, you know. But then again, you wouldn't necessarily want to read a story that just is about people being happy all the time. There's not a lot of drama inherent to that concept. So I think looking back 10, 20 years from now at the place we are in the world, you know, maybe I'm just an eternal optimist. I think it won't be as dire. I don't think we're going to be living in The Handmaid's Tale 20 years from now. But I think that the world reflects the art that gets created. And so where we are right now is some reflection of the broader world. And so I think it's always interesting to look back.
Sometimes the story reveals a little bit of the way things really are. It might exaggerate it a little bit. It might make it a little bit more dramatic, because it seems like life itself is not always that dramatic for most people. It's just kind of like, well, one day leads on to the next day, and not a lot seems to happen that seems to, that would be that interesting of a story. I remember years ago talking to a friend of mine over lunch, and we were talking about our lives, and I was talking about the things I'd got to do during my life at that time, and she said, oh, your life is so interesting and so much fun and so eventful. I wish I had a life like that. And I had just listened to her tell about all of the things that she had done, you know, in her life, which I thought were very intriguing. And I thought, that's a very interesting perspective, that you live your own life and you don't think it's eventful, but you tell somebody about it and they go, that's so cool. And isn't that the way story is sometimes? I was going to ask Cindy, you call yourself a matchmaker between people and books. Why do you say that, and how do you get to that place, to being able to know what the right book is for a person who's looking for something interesting to read, maybe?
I think my background as a librarian primed me for that, and it was really interesting. I worked at the Central Library with the Tulsa City County Library for 17 years, and over that period, the library became more and more focused on things other than books. And the library, you know, plays a really important role in any city. And they have to be all things to all people. That is their mission, pretty much. I was really only interested in books. And I think many librarians are frustrated, wannabe bookstore owners. So I always tried to carve out a place for myself in the library that focused on books and reading. And I developed training for staff that was called Reader's Advisory, that taught people how to listen to people talk about books and identify what it was about a book that drew them into the story, and then to, you know, develop their knowledge about books so that they could recommend books that they thought would be a good match. So when I had an opportunity to, you know, start a bookstore and to be executive director of the Tulsa Literary Coalition, that was an opportunity to focus my interest in books in a way that I really couldn't have had an opportunity at the library, because the library's role was just so much broader than that. To me, there is nothing more exciting than talking to people about books and helping them find a book that might have a real impact on them, whether it's just something that you know they're really going to enjoy, or whether it's something that will have a meaningful impact on their lives for years to come. And that happens. And I know that happens because it happened to me. And I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing today. I don't think I would have left the security of the library to start this new venture had I not read The Hours by Michael Cunningham several times, talked about it with book groups, and met the author. That book had a huge impact on my life and helped me see that I was closing myself off to opportunities because of fear. And it caused me to really examine my life. It was like the closest thing to a religious experience I had ever had. And it really opened up my world and opened up my mind and made me take some pretty fearless leaps. So I know that books can have that lasting impact on people. And to me, there's no greater calling in life than trying to help people find that unique experience that can be theirs just by opening up a book.
Isn't it really interesting that so many people are looking for that kind of direction? We search all the time, whether it's on the media or in the bookstore or in a tabloid as we check out from the grocery store, for some little piece of information that will make our life more meaningful.
And I think that's the difference in an independent bookstore, is that the staff really can help people navigate the world of books, because there's so many books published, and we can have we can influence people by what we choose to put on our shelves. We can influence people by what we choose to point out to them and by the authors that we bring to town. So I do think we're having a very positive impact on the community in that way.
And you brought some very interesting authors to town just in the time I've been around, which is part of what I've really enjoyed about the events that you all are promoting. And this has come, this has been going on for a while, as I understand, through the BookSmart effort. And Jeff, that was something that you got started with some years ago. Tell us about how that came about and how it's kind of grown over the time.
You know, I worked at, you know, chain bookstore for a long time. And as I was talking about earlier, there was a kind of a weird moment which happened, which was, you know, my job was doing events much like I do now. And I would do events with huge authors, and I was bringing big authors to town for the first time, even through that job, and doing a lot of really interesting things. But that job that I had was in some ways not kind of seen as crucial to the business. So when the bookstores started tanking, you know, the job that I had, which was kind of community relations and doing events and things like that, basically got wiped from the company. And so I got a, you know, notice one day on a cold, snowy day that the job I was doing was just kind of being gotten rid of. And so I found myself in this place where I didn't have anything to do. And I'm not good in that situation. So I thought, well, why can't I start my own thing? I'd been doing it for a while. I had some good contacts. And I thought, well, you know, in this interim period where I'm kind of floating around in the wilderness, I would function better having a project. And I'm always better when I have a project. So I decided to start this thing that I called BookSmart Tulsa. And the idea was originally to do a citywide book club, where we would get together in bars and talk about books that we're reading. But that changed pretty quickly when I realized that I was going to be only pulling a small audience into that. And we changed it pretty fast to a author program, a visiting author program, where the original idea was to bring in one person a month, different topic all the time, so you would have a different audience. So a cookbook, you know, and the next month you'd have a mystery writer, and you'd always be bringing in different constituencies. Now that grew a lot, and, you know, we ended up doing, you know, sometimes 50 plus 60 events a year. So the one a month thing didn't last very long because we started to get some traction. And we've had, I think if you look at who we've had over the last decade, it compares with any big city in America in terms of kind of the reach and scope of who we've been able to bring here. And we were able to do that with no money, you know. We did that through asking and having the willingness to hear the word no, asking hotels to donate rooms, asking airlines to donate flights, working with publishers, having restaurants give us vouchers for meals for authors, you know, all those things that it took to scrap together a, you know, something that to the public seemed like an organization that had resources, but it was really just figuring it out. And I think, you know, if I had waited to have, you know, a bunch of money or had to go out and raise money for that early, those early efforts, I would have been stuck in neutral. I wouldn't have been able to do things. I kind of just dove in and said, let's figure it out.
I'm intrigued by people who just see an opportunity and say, well, what do we got to do to pull this off? And they just get busy. And every time they run into an obstacle, they find a way around it, or they get more creative, or that opens a different kind of door, or it redirects them in a way that maybe they hadn't thought about before, and eventually they get it done. And you know, what a great way to impact your community than be a person who just simply says, I'm just going to take care of this.
Well, I've never thought of myself as an entrepreneur because I'm just not interested in money at all. I just don't care about that really. So I, you know, maybe if I had, I'd be a wealthy person, but I'm just not interested in that. I'm more interested in staying busy and trying to make some kind of impact. I have always had a tenacity to not take no for an answer. And I always think, I think the biggest thing, I always tell people this, they'll say, how do you guys do this? Or how do you bring in these people? I say, half the time the answer is just, we ask, you know. I think so many people stymie themselves by assuming something won't happen. You know, they'll say, well, I could never get that person here, or I could never make that happen, or I could never do that. That may be true, but my opinion is always you won't know until you ask or do you try. I've heard no many times. It's also people only see what happens. You know, no one ever sees all the times no one that we thought we were going to get somebody that didn't show up. If we had a list of every author we thought we were going to get and didn't work out, it'd be doubly impressive as what we have now. But people only see, you know, the things that work out. And I think that's also something that people should take comfort in. You know, most of that stuff behind the scenes stays behind the scenes, and people will see what you present to the world and how you kind of want your organization or your project to be perceived. And
well, that's good advice for anyone who is thinking they might want to make a difference or see something that they believe in passionately and want to try to make a dent in it or to change it some way. We get to thinking about all of the reasons why it can't happen, or we get discouraged by the no's. And I think your perspective that you mentioned is they only see the end of what you do. They don't see all of the steps along the way. They just see that you did it and what it looked like, and they make their judgment, I guess, based upon that.
What's that? There's a kind of a thing you see sometimes. It talks about, you know, success is just the iceberg sticking out of the water, and all the work that went into it is everything under the water. That's very much true. I think, I wouldn't want to have to show everybody, you know, all the begging and pleading we had to do in those early years to make it happen. But you know, if we hadn't, it wouldn't have led to where we are now. So
but along the way, things begin to kind of gel. There begins to be sort of a critical mass of support, and people kind of go, well, that's very cool. I think I like this idea. How do I get involved? Did that happen along the way with you all as well?
So we started the whole project in 2009, and so I would say around 2012, 2013, things really started to, you know, feel like people were coming up to me and talking about it, and we were starting to get more traction with authors that we wanted to bring here, because even though I'd been doing it professionally for a while before I started the project, I had no track record. You know, you were just an unknown person, so I had to prove that we could bring in audiences. I had to prove that we could, you know, get media coverage. I had to prove all that stuff. So that took some time to build up. But by the time we got to 2012, 2014, you know, we were having people approach us rather than us having to beg people to come here and having to, you know, twist arms. You know, people were saying, how about this or what about that? So it got easier along the way. But then, you know, the project just grew. So every time something gets easier, you know, I like to add something to make it a little bit harder. So, but Cindy and I started really talking about this project probably as early as maybe late 2014. And at that time, it was still kind of speculative. Steve's Sundries and Books Closed, which was a local bookseller here, which had been around for decades. So there was kind of a vacuum in the independent bookselling world in Tulsa. And, you know, we'd talked about it forever, and there had been attempts to buy that bookstore that didn't work out, and people wanted to save it. So you saw that there was a grassroots element of people that really wanted to keep something like that. But then when it disappeared, there was a gap in the cultural life of the city, and then Cindy kind of really took it and ran from there.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that, sort of that moment when you realized you were going to jump in there and do it. Because like you said earlier, you left sort of the comfort and security of a real job, let's say, with the library system, to venture out into this. What was that moment like for you when you decided it was time to make that transition?
I remember the moment extremely well, and it was in February of 2015, and it was at an author event, and Jeff looked at me and said, what would you think about starting a bookstore? And I said, let's do it. And which was very much unlike me. I'm a very cautious person. But I was just at the point in my life where I was ready to make a change. I was at an age that I could take early retirement from the library. And once I make up my mind to do something, there's just no turning back for me. So I was committed to it. It was like the culmination of a life's dream. My husband and I had talked about owning a bookstore But we wanted to do more than have a bookstore. We wanted to have a nonprofit organization that would offer literary programs in addition to the author events, and that could really have an impact in the community and could really fill a void. So I had no idea how to start a nonprofit or how to start a bookstore for that matter. But I am a librarian, so I knew how to research things. And you just start, you know, reading and researching and asking people and joining the right organizations and hiring a good attorney. And what we did was extremely complex. It was not easy. It was, starting a nonprofit first, getting a board together, starting to raise money. We at first opened an account with the Tulsa Community Foundation until we got our 501c3 status from the IRS, and that allowed us to start raising money. We got an amazing response from Tulsa. It was clear that people believed that our mission was important, and we raised over $500,000. And I think because we had a clear vision of what we wanted the end product to look like, we just kept taking baby steps in that direction, and there were many days when I felt like, oh my God, I have no clue what I'm doing. But I just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And, you know, before you knew it, we had a bookstore. And, you know, in January, we're launching 5 book groups that we're hosting here in the Algonquin Room in the store. We're beginning to offer literary programs in January. And then, of course, Jeff continues to bring in just an amazing lineup of authors. So we have done an incredible amount of business since we opened, more than we ever expected to do. The response has been so warm. Tulsa obviously wanted this very much, and it just all feels very right and very good. It's a very positive environment, and I'm just absolutely thrilled that it has come to fruition in the way it has.
How important is the role of your location in the development of your idea here? Because you're in the Detroit and Archer, for those people who know Tulsa, for those who don't, you're kind of on the corner of the Arts District.
Right.
You're very close to the Greenwood District. And so it's a very historical, meaningful place, and it has a lot of focus and attention. So was this where you wanted to be, or did this just kind of be a place that happened for you?
Yeah, this is the best place to be in Tulsa right now, I think. And we saw an opportunity to be another spoke on the wheel of the literary arts hub in town. There was, we have fabulous museums and music venues and wonderful restaurants and all kinds of great things going on with Guthrie Green. But there was nothing that filled that literary gap. So we think we're filling that gap. We're collaborating with other organizations in the district. And I think it's a fabulous place to be right now in Tulsa. And the George Kaiser Family Foundation owns the building. They've been wonderful supporters to us. And it was just a great opportunity.
What do you see as the next steps for this project?
Well, I think that the one thing we have that was so unique to our situation was when we opened the doors to this bookstore on the first day, we had a built-in audience because we, one, had been doing events through Magic City even for the previous, year and a half. But then we'd also been doing all those other events for nearly a decade. And the buzz was unbelievable. When we opened the store, we did a ribbon cutting, and there were just hundreds of people lined up outside waiting to get in. That's not the norm for a new business opening, okay? And that's because it's not just a business. You know, it's much more than that. People have something inside of them that, was touched by the opening of this place and the idea of this place and what it represents to them and the place they want to live in. You know, people want to think of their hometown as a place that reflects them and has certain, offerings and where it stands in comparison to other places, in other cities. I always say if you're any city worth a damn needs at least one good independent bookstore. And that's kind of what we're doing here. Next steps would be fostering that audience. So we have this base audience. How can we keep growing it? I would love to see a literary festival in Tulsa in the next few years. And you go around the country, places like Austin, Nashville, some of even smaller places have these great kind of weekend festivals, very similar to a music festival or a food and wine festival. But this would be all about literary culture, books. You know, you'd bring in your headliners and you'd really get to focus on local authors and just have a really special moment. Now, that's years in, down the road, I think, but I do see us growing into something beyond that. And our impact in the community is really where the opportunity lies. You know, there's no limit to the collaboration. There's no limit to how we can impact groups, not just in our area downtown. We want to reach people in suburbs. We want to reach people, you know, who aren't just in kind of our little bubble that we live in down here in this part of Tulsa. This place really is for everybody. You were asking about kind of the historic nature of this district. This building is from 1925, you know, 4 years after the Tulsa race riot happened just a block over. We're called Magic City for many reasons, but one of the reasons actually is inspired by a great novel that I read years ago called Magic City by a woman named Jewel Parker Rhodes. And it really is about Tulsa and the Greenwood District and what happened during that horrible time in 1921. But it's also about the idea of Magic City. You know, people called Tulsa the Magic City in the teens and 20s because you could come here and perhaps get wealthy overnight through the oil and gas industry. There's people on record like Teddy Roosevelt and General Pershing during World War I and Harry Truman as late as the late 1940s referring to Tulsa as the Magic City. And so I've always thought of it as kind of a two-sided thing. It's both a historical reference, but it's also aspirational, because I always tell people that now is the best time to be living in Tulsa. Whatever time you think was the best time to have lived here, it's not. It's now, because we're not perfect. There's a lot of problems still in the city and the broader state, but I do think our city within the state of Oklahoma represents what the rest of Oklahoma could be. You know, I think we are the best representation of what Oklahoma is here. And I think that our best days are yet to come. Even though I think this is the best time to have lived here, I still think we're on an upward climb to where 5 to 10 years from now, due in, you know, part to efforts by George Kaiser Family Foundation, who was very helpful in us getting this project through, other nonprofits. Everybody's kind of working in concert to make this a better place. And I think it has to be intentional. Tulsa downtown 10 years ago was a completely different place. That the fact that it looks different, feels different, is different now, didn't happen by accident. That happened because individuals and organizations made a decision to change it. You know, so that will that created this, if we can keep that going, who knows where we can go from here.
I know there's a lot of emphasis in Tulsa right now from the mayor and others to really attract a younger population, to bring that younger, you know, 20s and 30s, that millennial generation to town through entrepreneurship and other things. Are you seeing this bookstore is having, and this project is having an influence on maybe making that happen or attracting that group as well? Are you seeing younger people coming to the bookstore?
Well, the answer is yes. And I think a lot of people are surprised by that. Not us, but I think customers. People would say, well, it's only going to be older people shopping there. And I think we've already seen that that's not the case. You come here on a Friday night or whatever, and you're just not seeing that. You're seeing a wide variety, not just age diversity. You're seeing racial diversity. You're seeing gender diversity. You're seeing all that. And that's what we want. You know, that's our ideal. We want this place to be for everybody. I'm, you know, like a little bit older than the millennials, so I'm not quite that. I think I missed it by a few years. But I think I can still kind of, you know, I'm in proximity to the millennials. So I think our real impact is through programming. We just did a big grand opening event with an actress named Emma Roberts, who is a millennial and kind of represents that generation. And that event, which had hundreds of people, probably was half people of that generation. So a lot of it is we need to provide things that they want to do. You know, we can't just assume that they're going to come here. As with any demographic or audience that you want to reach, to take them for granted or to ever assume that people will just come to you because you're a cool place is not the thing. You have to make overtures and you have to do programming that will reach out to them. So as long as we continue to do that, I think that, you know, we will be in a good place.
Well, the future certainly looks bright, and I'm very impressed. One thing I want to ask of each of you before we wrap up is your own personal takeaway. What have you learned about yourself in this project and in the process and in this journey? How have you grown, or what have you overcome as a challenge maybe that you think has made you a better person and fit for what's down the road?
For me, it has been a real roller coaster ride. It is by far the most difficult thing I've ever done, but at the same time, it is by far the most rewarding. It proved to me that sometimes it pays to take a risk. I'm not a big risk taker, but because this was something I felt so passionate about, I thought, you know, I'm going to die someday anyway. I may as well just go out doing something I love. So even though it required a lot of hard work and a lot of sacrifice, it showed me that I'm pretty tough, and that you can figure out how to do things if you don't know going in, and that if you just keep that vision really strongly in front of you and keep moving towards it, you can get there.
What about you, Jeff?
More than anything, this project and this whole journey has proven to me that the most important thing is to surround yourself with people that you trust, that can do things you can't do. You know, Cindy and I are very different people in many ways. You know, we have very shared loves of certain things, but I'm not super organized and I'm not super, you know, detail oriented. She is. And that's important that, you know, I'm not expecting her to be just like me, and she doesn't expect me to be just like her. The point is we have a shared goal and we use the tools that we both have to make that happen. And that's not just Cindy and myself. We found people like our store manager, Bettina, has certain skill set that we knew that we needed that neither Cindy or I have. Leanna, who is our program director and our buyer, has skills that we don't have. But what we want to do is we want to create this mosaic of skill sets that eventually creates this picture, which is Magic City Books. And so not assuming you can do everything yourself, not assuming that you can change. I'm never going to be like somebody else. I'm going to be the way I am. I certainly see my faults and I want to get better, and I do think people can change. But I think that someone used to tell me, they'd say that you got to put the aces in their places, which meant you got to find people make mistakes assuming that for example, if you're an employer, you need to find the right person for that job. You can't force someone to do something that's not the way that they do things. The real key to management is finding the person that's the perfect fit for that, or seeing someone that you know has a certain skill set. I'll say this, I failed up so much. When I worked in kind of corporate, you know, bookstores and things like that, I wasn't good at anything except doing events and talking to people and getting media and, you know, getting people excited about things. I wasn't good at it. And for some reason, they, you know, I'll give them credit, they kept saying, you're not good at this. How about you try this? And I kind of, I call it failing up. People, you know, people say that a lot. And it worked out for me because I finally could find what my passion was. And we need people along the way to help us find that. We need mentors. I've had a lot of great mentors along in my life that have pointed me in the right direction to say, this is kind of your thing. You need to kind of focus on this. Don't be this. Don't do what other people think you should be doing. You know, find what you're passionate about. And, you know, not always, but if you truly do have an interest and have a passion for something and you're not afraid to fail and maybe not afraid to, you know, be broke sometimes, you know, whatever the thing is, you can find an industry or a passion that will hopefully reflect that. There's a million things to do in this world. And if it doesn't exist, just do it yourself. That's the other thing. You know, if there's not a bookstore in New York City that you want to work for, start your own bookstore and make it yourself. I think that's probably the best thing I've learned.
Well, there are people who make things happen. And this sense of empowerment and this inner energy, this creative energy that comes from within is something we all need to foster. That maybe we have more of it in ourselves than what we think we do. We don't give ourselves enough credit for having this creative sense of urgency and energy to do things that we're passionate about or be involved with things we're passionate about. And I think the story that you've told here on this episode of The Spirit of Leading kind of speaks to that. And hopefully it'll be encouraging to others who have that passion within them and they're looking for just something to turn them loose and to let them go. What a great story. This would make a good book. The story of Magic City.
We'll see.
So thanks so much for taking time to tell us this part of your story. I know there's going to be much more to say down the road and much more that's going to happen here. This is just a beginning place. I'm excited to maybe be in a place where I can see it firsthand. So good luck to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's Cindy Hulsey and Jeff Martin. They were the co-founders of the Tulsa Literary Coalition and partners in Magic City Books and Booksmart Tulsa. Certainly an exciting adventure that's happening in Tulsa, and it's got a lot of people excited about the future of books and story and an opportunity to really meet a lot of great authors who come to town and to hear them tell about their story and their books and how those all came about. So thanks so much for being with us on this episode of The Spirit of Leading.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Spirit of Leading podcast. Until next time, I encourage you to live each and every day empowered. Find that creative energy within you and let it come out. I want you to encourage the spirit to enliven the heart, to enlighten the mind, and to enlarge the expectations of living in yourself and in others. I'm Garland McWaters.